that high.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is the Coco Express Show, and before I air this segment, I would like to let you know that the guests in this particular show are neither attorneys or accountants. If you would like to exploit information detailed in this particular show, please consult either the guests on the show who give you their detailed information at the end of the episode, or consult with an attorney or an accounting professional. Now, enjoy the show.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Hey, guess what? It is Saturday, April 14th, 2012, and we are bringing to you our new segment, Real Estate Straight Talk with Sharon Homer. However, before I bring you that, I have one thing that I need to do, and I want you to take some time out to check out Proverbs 13. I'm not going to go into it in detail, but basically it talks about what we do with our mouths as far as when we speak and when we listen to correction for our actions. So at your leisure, please take the time out to read Proverbs 13. It has some really wise, 25 really wise verses for you to really, really get into and think about very carefully. So on that note, I would like to tell you that this is Compliments of Manny Haley of Imani Entertainment Group. So let's get on over to the other side and start talking about real estate with Real Estate Straight Talk and Sharon Homer.
Welcome to Real Estate Straight Talk with industry professional Sharon Homer, breaking it down and giving you the inside track on the real estate front so that you too can achieve the new American dream.
Hello, everyone. How are you? Sharon, what's up?
We're all great things, Aurelia. It's good to be back on the show. Thank you again for having me.
Yes, yes, and I believe you brought someone with you. Are you there, Mr. Bilardo?
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, yep, I'm here.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us today. Today we have with us two real estate professionals from the Delaware area. And basically, when we last met, Sharon and I, we discussed the American dream. And we gave us, you know, a little bit of background about the real estate industry. But before we go into all that, perhaps we would like to have a little background information on you, so that we will know who you are and where you come from and how you stand in the real estate industry, sir.
Okay, my name is Joe Bilardo. I've been a realtor since 2005. I also have a property management company. So I'm involved heavily, you know, in dealing with rentals and investors as well as sales and, you know, everything else. So, and I work very closely with Sharon Homer.
Okay, great. So the two of you are out there, out and about, really in and out of all the different things that are going on out there as far as real estate is concerned. And my big question to both of you, and we're taking this from our last discussion, the American dream, is it up in smoke? Or is it just a smoke screen?
So I'll let you lead.
I would say I think it was a smoke screen. And I think what's happening now is the reality is kicking in. Sharon and I were talking about this earlier, and basically what happened is that these big corporations and banks, you know, primarily the financial institutions, pretty much owned your American dream, because you know, we were buying houses and we were buying cars and we're shopping, but it was all on credit. So the situation we're in now is one where you can, you know, it looks like a mess, but in it's a time where you can sort of bypass these institutions and, you know,
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
now,
so yeah.
Go ahead, Sharon, what's your thought?
No, Joe's phone was cutting out a little bit, mm-hmm. so I just wanted to kind of piggyback off of what he said, and I do also agree that it was almost a smokescreen, and as he stated, you know, the financial institutions really did have a huge, they actually have everything to do with the crippling economy as well, including the real estate market at this particular time, which leads the consumers to believe that this American dream is up in smoke, when in reality, it's actually the best season and time to purchase real estate and to get into real estate. So that's what we would like to educate and teach the consumers, and how to do that, how to buy low and get in and start owning, rather than, as Joe mentioned earlier, being dependent on credit, buying everything on credit. So.
Oh, okay. Now, for the average person who has very limited knowledge about the industry and about buying a home, now you discussed buying low. What exactly does that mean?
What it means today is pretty much buying the dream and buying the reality, which is the American dream. I mean, prices are low and affordable, actually reasonable, and it is leveling out to what it actually should be. I remember hearing before, growing up at a younger age, that, you know, people would purchase homes for $8,000, $5,000. And I used to think that was impossible as I got older and really got into the real estate game. However, this is the reality that we actually live in today. I mean, houses are low. They're affordable. I mean, people purchase cars for more than $5,000. I mean, you can purchase real estate now for $5,000. So this is not a gimmick or a scheme like you used to hear as buy low, pennies on the dollar. You really can purchase pennies on the dollar in this market. So that is, buying low is actually exactly what it says, is buying low.
Now, we know that the banks kind of control pretty much everything in regards to the real estate market. Now, and they have had such new restrictions and guidelines on the lending of their money. And a lot of people will not qualify to be able to buy a house. Now, how can they get in on the deal knowing that things are the way they are now?
Get in on purchasing real estate in today's
yes.
market?
Yes.
Well, one, they will have to, I guess, view where they're investing their money. People invest their money in 401ks and stocks and so many different other places. And some people invest their money in vacations and other, you know, things. So getting involved doesn't always mean having to obtain a mortgage. It just pretty much means get involved in knowing how you're spending and investing your money. So if you want to invest and you have money to invest, then you can purchase real estate. You can purchase real estate outright and not have to own a mortgage. I think a lot of people have the perception of owning real estate is also having a mortgage. And we want to teach people how to expand their minds and to own real estate and many other ways and avenues and ways to obtain that. And pretty much is, of course, you have to have cash. But to find that cash, you have to look within and to look, where are you investing and how are you investing your money?
Okay. And what are your thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I would agree with what Sharon was saying, and I would also elaborate in saying that, you know, when a house would cost you $200,000, that was such a large number to come up with that you had no choice but to get a mortgage. But when you can buy a house for, you know, $20,000 or, you know, even $50,000, you know, those numbers become numbers where even if you were borrowing the money, they're obtainable through ways other than a mortgage loan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are some of the systems that Sharon and I work on, certain things as far as owner financing.
Mm-hmm.
So even those of you who own a home and think, I can't sell my house in this market because I'm underwater, well, that may or may not be the case. You know, there may be creative ways that you can sell your home to someone and creative ways a person can buy a home and bypass the banks altogether.
Okay. Now, when you said owner financing, can you go into a little bit of detail on exactly what that means?
Okay. Without getting too technical, when you buy a house, you know, and you are paying with a mortgage, you basically sign a note, which is an IOU. Now, anyone who owns anything of value, which a house is something of value, can also write, per se, an IOU with that, you know, thing as collateral, or can take one. So in other words, a person purchasing a home can say, hey, you know, I'm taking this home, and in return, here's my note. But I'm instead of signing it over to a bank, I'm signing it over to an individual. And the same principles apply. You can charge the interest and, you know, work the deal however way you want to. There are also rent to own and other things, but, you know, that's just one scenario.
Okay. Sharon, do you have any further elaborations on this?
No, that is exactly what Joe and I try to work with our clients with, is creating options and creative financing, as you stated, so that people are in position to sell their homes and buyers are in position to purchase homes, as you stated earlier, because the banks are not lending, because they're becoming sticklers on credit scores and so many other things. And with the economy in general, the economy is more likely up in smoke because a lot of people don't have jobs and haven't been on jobs for a certain amount of time frames that banks are requiring them to be. But with creative financing, you're working with the individual owner who may have some leniency on having sellers to remain in their homes rather than having to short sell or to foreclose, or buyers who are in need to either, as you stated, rent to own or actually purchase a home, that the owner themselves can be in position to assist buyers in getting into a home at a realistic, affordable rate, not only monthly payment, but as well as a purchase price, and, you know, to stabilize, help. And these type of creative financing will help stabilize the real estate market. We can't really speak on the overall economy. However, stabilization in the market will come through the consumer stepping up and owning more than being a borrower.
Oh, so basically what you're saying now is it's time for the consumers to be a little bit more, not let's say educated, but savvy in regards to how they invest anything that they have, and be it their cash, their whatever it is that they have. They have to be savvy about how they invest that.
Correct. I think it's important for consumers to now realize money as an investment, but also real estate is also an asset. So how to leverage these assets that we actually have and that we all need every day.
Yes, I would agree. I would just like to add that I would extend that to all phases of your life as well, because a part of the reason why we're in the situation we're in is because people were not only savvy but didn't really care how much money they were spending. You know, car notes, for example, there's car notes that are ridiculous. You know, the amount of money people are paying extra for cars. You know, credit cards is another example. And the thing is, all of those notes, all of those loans you took out, all of that credit, you could have negotiated it. you didn't have to just accept the rate they gave you. But I think now, you know, reality is setting in, and, you know, we all have to be a little bit smarter about these financial decisions we make.
Okay. Now, when we say that, let's be a little bit more specific. Okay, we have Jane. She's an individual. Jane wants to buy a house. Okay, Jane works hard. She's been on her job for a long time, but she can't afford to come up with that 20% or 30% down payment. What are Jane's options right now? What can you say are her options?
There is conventional.
Well,
go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead. No, well, I was gonna say there are so many options right now. One, as you mentioned, the 20% down payment. You know, that, again, with the prices of homes being so low right now, 20% down payment could be a very low number.
Okay.
One, because remember, we're talking there are houses on the market for less than $20,000.
Okay.
So that's the one thing that I want people to realize is, you know, don't go into the situation assuming how much a house is going to cost. It's definitely a buyer's market, and you're in a position to negotiate. But the other thing is, if you were doing a rent-to-own option, you're pretty much spending approximately the same amount you're already spending in rent. So Jane doesn't necessarily have to, spend much more than she already is spending. But I will also say to her is, you know, you got to find a way. I would advise everyone to find a way to save some cash, you know, because that's how we kind of got into the situation is all we worried about was the payment. Can I make the payment? But, you know, we have to sacrifice nowadays.
And Aurelia, I would like to add, if Jane is the family woman or the family woman who needs a house that is $200,000+, then, and she doesn't have the 20% down, then as an agent, I would sit down and assess, as we spoke on the last segment, to assess the needs and the wants that she has and needs in a home. And pretty much if she doesn't have those funds to put down on the home, then there are down payment assistance programs that will assist her. I would really try to guide her to get a grant rather than a loan. And pretty much I would really educate her on finding something that's affordable so that she does not need a hefty amount of money down. Because a lot of people is where the subprime lending market became very successful, but also has a lot to do with this economy, is a lot of people wanted to spend more and put more money down to have a home, a bigger home, a larger home or something, a home that they really did not need. So a lot of people became greedy in the housing market, just like they do in any other area in life. So if you don't have the money to put down, then you pretty much, what I'm trying to say is you have to stay and buy within the means in which you can afford. And that's pretty much it.
Okay, now let's just say Jane, we have Jane. And we're going to give Jane a little bit more details to her story. Jane, other than working her job for a long time, Jane also has some money saved. But still, she was looking at the $200,000 marker. Now, but she can't come up with that 20% for the $200,000 home. Now, okay, her options, as you stated, one option would be rent to own. Okay, when you say rent to own, do you mean that she assumes the house, she lives in the house, and whatever it is that she's paying for rent is going towards the purchase of that home? For how long, what are the terms and the agreements on situations like this, hypothetically?
Well, one, it's an agreement. So the one answer is it can be whatever the buyer and seller agree to. But I would say on average, usually what it'll be is a percentage of the rent will go towards the down payment. Well, one, you have, when you move into a place, you pay a security deposit, which is your money, which you get back when you move out. In this case, you wouldn't be moving out. You'd be, taking over ownership of the home. Mm-hmm. So one, you would have that security deposit, which would go towards your down payment, and the lender, if your goal is to get mortgage ready, so to speak, by being able to, acquire that down payment, that would help. And then in addition, some of the extra payment, or some of the rent, I should say, some of the payment would go, some of it would be rent, as it is a rent to own.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it would go towards your down payment. And by renting, you would accrue what you need to have the down payment and to be able to obtain the mortgage, so that it's, after a period of time. And it's not a set period. It's what you agree with the seller on.
Okay.
And then you would purchase the home.
So a good example would be if you have Jane and you have Bob, and Jane wants to purchase a home from Bob, and the home is, say, $200,000, and Bob and Jane come to an agreement together, and say the agreement is to pay $1,200 a month, or, whatever, if it's $1,000 a month. $500, like he said, your security deposit can go toward is put in an escrow account, and it's applied to whatever your closing cost or down payment is for when you agree to purchase that home, whether it's 5 to 7 years down the road or 3 to 5 years down the road. And every month that you make a mortgage payment of that $1,000, say $300 or $500 is applied to the actual rent, and the other $500 to say apply to the down payment. Is that a good example, Joe?
Yeah, and it might not necessarily play out exactly like that, but
it's whatever
basically
the agreement
how it
is.
Works. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically how it would work.
Now, we're gonna flip it over. We're gonna flip it over and look at Bob under the microscope a little bit now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bob being the owner of the supposed property, he
mm-hmm.
can also turn around and say, this house is free and clear. I don't have any mortgage on it. I don't have any debt or anything attached to this particular home. I want to move to the Bahamas and everything. So I can work it out so that she can just outright buy the house from me. I'll be the bank.
Correct.
Okay.
That would be owner financing.
Okay.
Right.
Now, how do you work out? But how does that work?
Okay,
it works exactly how you would a bank. We'll work it out with obtaining a mortgage through your Wells Fargo, your Bank of America, whatever. It's the same process. It's just that you don't have the systematic process as the underwriting and the loan processing and the extreme screening process as you would the bigger corporations that Joe spoke of earlier. But it's the same notes, the same settlement transaction. As if a buyer today was purchasing a home and had a lien holder and had Bank of America as their lien holder, the owner themselves is positioning themselves. Bob has positioned himself because his home is no longer a collateral. He has the deed and has that deed outright because the home is paid off. Then he has that deed and has every right to write a note on that home because he's free and clear.
Okay, now
when he
crafts this particular kind of note, how does he do it? How does he go about it? He goes to an attorney? Is it word of mouth?
Yeah.
What is it? What happens?
You would sit down with the real estate attorney, and they would draw. They would basically, write it up and record it. You would, if you do it, official, you would record it with the recorders of deeds, which is what the same thing you do when you get a mortgage loan from a bank, and basically, you would make a monthly payment the same way you do with your mortgage, but you'd be making it to Bob. And, after however many years it takes you to pay him off, it doesn't have to be 30, banks do 30-year mortgages, but if you pay attention, most of those payments are interest.
Yes.
So it shouldn't take you 30 years to pay off a house. So maybe Bob will come up with a more, you know, realistic scenario, and maybe something easier on the buyer. Because Bob's main thing is he just wants to get rid of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in this economy, it's hard to get $200,000 for a house, you know, with all the foreclosures and short sales. So Bob may be willing to work with you, you know, and do a deal that's, you know, that's something Jane can afford. And she'll make her payments to him, and she'll have a house.
Oh,
and maybe be able to pay off that house in less than 30 years.
Right, maybe 15 instead of 30.
Okay, mm-hmm. So now we have Jane in the house. We have Bob on his way to the Caribbean.
Right.
Now we got Sally coming up. Sally just got her first job. Sally's been working on her job, let's say, for about a year. She just got out of college. She doesn't have a great deal of college debt. And she realizes that she doesn't want to throw all her money out into renting. Now, what are the options for Sally?
Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just going to say, you know, there's so many options for anyone that wants to get into a home right now. Again, with the low prices, and I was just telling Sharon earlier, if I were a young, single guy again, I would buy one of these $20,000 houses, and even if it was a bank-owned property and needed work done, I'd buy it, live in it, fix it, you know, and then move on. You know, that becomes my rental or what have you. I think these, you know, at $20,000 a pop, I think young, old families can get together. And, you know, just your family, think of your friends, you know, think of groups of people you know. It shouldn't, you know, pooling your resources shouldn't be that difficult to buy a house. I mean, there are houses for less than $10,000 on the market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if everybody can come up with even $500, you get a group of people, I mean, you have a house. You know, it's that simple.
And I would add to Joe, because I was going to go the same route that he went. If you had Sally as a college student coming out and understands the importance of investing and wanted to own over renting, then I would steer her the same direction as Joe just mentioned, and I would start with a realistic budget for her. And even if she were to purchase something up to $100,000, and, you know, because that's still a very low mortgage payment, or however, even if she can get a mortgage, and just even do something, a multi-unit, and live in one unit and rent out the rest of the units and have your tenants pay your mortgage for you. Those, I mean, that's, you know, you're not owning it outright, but you most certainly are having someone else. She's not paying her mortgage because she does have a roof over her head, and she's a college student. She's used to living in, you know, small quarters. And then it doesn't even necessarily have to be small quarters. But, you know, that will be another creative way of owning outright, coming right out of college. And also, and you know, that's a huge and very good investment on her end, because as she continues to work and grow in her career, she can move on and still maintain that property, because, again, she has, as long as she keeps that property occupied, and she hires someone like Joe as a property manager or something to keep that property occupied and maintained, then she, you know, is just maintaining the asset, which is the, you know, which is the property, but her mortgage is still being paid, and she can continue to work to pay that property off, and she can move on. She can move out of that unit and purchase something else and continue to invest, because she already has a good idea of what investing is and what it feels like to invest, and that would be another really good option for Sally as well.
Wow, we've already taken care of three people now. Okay. Now let's move on to something that Joe mentioned. He said something about, I'm going to coin it as, Joe dropped off, a buying group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he dropped off, and we'll see if we can get him back. So I'm just going to let you go into details, and I'll try to see if I can get him back. A buying group. What exactly would a buying group be? And you can elaborate on that while I try to see if I can get Joe back.
Okay. Buying is just typically buying within a group of investors. There's actually a lot of old money and new money sitting out here that you can put your money together and purchase real estate. And that's pretty much the basic principle of doing that is to own outright rather than going through the banks to have to obtain that mortgage, especially in this economy. You really don't see investor loans anymore. A lot of banks are weaning off of, you know, these investment style mortgages. So the smartest thing to do with that is to bring a group together and bring your funds together and invest together. So, and you can, you know, that's a whole other thing between you and the group as to how those funds, you know, how to work that. So, you know, that can be something that is not only worked on one property, but can be worked on multiple properties. But it's just really the coming together of a group of people, bringing your money together and investing in a property or properties.
Okay, Joe, when you dropped off, we had touched on something that you mentioned, and I call it a buying group. And Sharon was just going, you know, she was elaborating on that. And I wanted to know what are your thoughts on a buying group?
I encourage it wholeheartedly. I've actually encountered buying groups. And, you know, it's a lot easier. You know, some people may be intimidated by that. But if you really sit down and take care of it in a professional manner from the beginning, I mean, you can even have a lawyer draw it up. You know, and even down to the way the deed is recorded and what shares, you know, each person has. Another thing you can do is form like an LLC.
Mm-hmm.
And that way everyone is the owner of the LLC, and then the LLC can purchase the properties. And in that way, you know, just whatever is agreeable to the group. You know, the main thing is to keep the integrity of it, you know, keep everything
mm-hmm.
on a professional level. But, I mean, you really can purchase these houses at a low price, and you could do it as something to live in, but you can also do it as a way to have another stream of income. You know, and
mm-hmm.
in this economy, we could all use a little more income. And, I mean, literally, you can – I mean, I have – that I've helped. I mean, they've bought houses for under 30 grand, and they now have them rented out for, you know, maybe $975 a month. And when you do the numbers, your money's made back within 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you take the if you're not greedy and don't need the money per se, imagine taking say almost $1,000 a month rent. And just putting it in the bank, and then when it builds
mm-hmm.
up to another $5,000-$10,000, you can buy another property, and then it becomes
mm-hmm.
exponential. So you can accumulate a vast amount of wealth in a short period of time in this economy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With real estate.
Okay, great. Now you keep mentioning, you know. See, I know when you get a group of people together, you have a whole bunch of different personalities and so on and so forth, and you keep mentioning maintaining the integrity of the group. Now,
yeah.
Okay. Now, the degree of difficulty that I think this is a wonderful concept, and I am really going to, you know, sit down and start rethinking myself seriously. But the degree of difficulty in having these people together is because everybody's probably going to want to try to figure out their share.
Well,
and it doesn't work like that? Does it work like, or it doesn't work like that? When you're talking real estate and buying groups, it doesn't work like that. Does it?
No. Here's my recommendation. Hire, you know, you do whatever you do. You know, you have, you know, your job, and you do it, you know, you do what you do. You don't do real estate. So my advice to you is hire professionals to do what you do. You know, it's a business like any other business. It, you know, if you owned a restaurant, you don't have to be the chef in the kitchen cooking. You could just be the owner of that restaurant. So if you hire someone like Sharon or myself or whoever you know and work with are comfortable and know what they're doing, I would hire competent realtors, competent property managers, competent real estate attorneys, competent contractors for when work needs to be done. And again, if you create it as a company, as an LLC, and just keep it as that, you know, you could work out the percentages of what people who owns what up front before you've purchased the first property. And it should be based on whatever you guys agree to, but I would say based on how much everyone put in. So if everyone put in an equal share, then you get an equal share.
Correct.
But I don't think, you know, every time someone, you know, anytime there's going to be a tenant to move in, say there's a group of five people that all five of you are arguing over who the tenant should be, you should hire a competent property manager and put your, you know, you hired that person, so you're handing them the reins.
Mm-hmm.
And those people can make reports back to you. Hey, here's what's going on with the property. Here's what needs to be done. Here's what the tenant. I collected the rent. And that way, it kind of takes a lot of that out of it. You know.
Okay.
It's building your team of professionals. Yeah, it's definitely building your team of professionals. And I mean, it can be a team of two. It can be a team of five. It really is. You know, I sold one the end of last year. It was a team of two. You had an investor, and you had the contractor, and they both went in together, and I don't know exactly what, you know, what their deal was together and who got what and how they worked it out, but it works, and they purchased all of their properties together. So, I mean, it works, and that's actually what, you know, Joe and I see a whole lot more of in this economy are group investors, because as I stated earlier, banks really don't have those investment options anymore. They're there. But they're a lot more unreal. It's not that they're unrealistic, but they're harder to obtain anymore. When at one point in time, it was very easy.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, there is money still to be made out here, and there is money to be lent. It's just a matter of getting, sometimes you have to get groups of people together and work out a deal and make it work.
Okay. Now, on the property standpoint, on the property side, with some of these properties, do they require that you be an owner, owner-occupy or not? Or it all depends on the property?
It depends on the property. It depends
mm-hmm.
on who's selling the property. But what I would say is there are incentives for owner-occupants, but there's not a mandate.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Fannie Mae,
mm-hmm.
They own a lot of properties, and what happens is when Fannie Mae puts a house on the market, owner-occupants for the first 15 days have the first
mm-hmm.
look, as they say. After that 15-day period, anyone else, any investor or anyone else can, you know, step into the arena, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they do, especially these, you know, the banks with some of the bank loans and some of the other situations and municipalities, you know, they foreclose on people too for not paying property taxes and so
mm-hmm.
on. They definitely have incentives for owner-occupants, which goes back to the example of the young college student. You know, if she could get her hands on one of those, it'd be a great deal for her to move into, or maybe even, say, a group of college friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as Sharon pointed out, you get a triplex. Hey, each one of us get an apartment in here. And
mm-hmm.
you can get good deals. I have a client that bought a duplex for $15,000, you know, two people put in, that's, you know, seven and a half, you know,
oh,
each.
Mm-hmm.
It's doable.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I would just like to add to what Joe stated and to help answer your question as well is, as he stated, it really depends on the house. A lot of government homes sold by the government do have that 15-day window, and some, like you said, there are incentives for owner-occupied. But, if you know, depending on what state you're in, you know, I know speaking on Delaware in particular, there are other types of homes that actually encourage investors. Like there are homes that our city of Wilmington has to offer that are you can purchase for a dollar, and they encourage investors to they want investors to purchase these homes. There's a significant amount of work that needs to be done to them, but it's almost like you're just paying to get the work done. You're just paying to do the work, and you have ownership of the home almost. I mean, there are different programs, and it's so many different options in real estate to invest in. I mean, there is a very diverse amount of programs out here, options out here for owner occupants, for investors, even in, as Drew mentioned earlier, for sellers. When the news and everything makes us feel like the American dream is up in smoke, but there are really still a lot of options. And like I mentioned on the last show, For as long as we are here, we all need a place to live and work. So we all need real estate. So it's just a matter of are you an investor, are you a renter, a tenant? Like, you have to put yourself in that. I mean, you have to know what you want to do and how you can maximize in this industry and in this economy.
Okay, well, we are coming close to our time, and I would like for you to give information as to where people can contact you. Sharon, can you please tell us how people can get in contact with you?
Sure. I can be reached at area code 302-540-9626, or you can email me at Sharon, Sharon, at HREAssociates.com.
Okay, Joe, how can people get in contact with you?
Okay, my email is averagejoe720@msn.com, mm-hmm. or you could give me a call at area code 302-438-5453.
Great, great. That is excellent. And I want to stop here because when we meet again next month, we're going to really, really dig deep and elaborate more on these particular things that you discussed, because, like, I'm just a consumer, and you guys are the experts, so I will come to you with a flood of questions in regards to the things that we discussed here, so that the listeners can really get a full understanding, and then they can see how they can go out and start doing something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Well, I look forward to it.
Okay, great. Joe, you going to join us?
Yes.
I will. Sure will.
Okay, all right. Okay, so I want to thank you both so much for taking the time to share your wealth and your knowledge on this particular industry and on the fact that, no, there was a smoke screen and it's dissipating, and the opportunities are clear as the sun shines in the
mm-hmm.
morning. So to all my listeners, please take the time out to listen and learn. That way you can live a really good life. And I would like to thank you all for your continued support. I want to thank our two guests today for sharing all the information that they have with us. And I want you to have a wonderful, wonderful day. Be well.
Well, that's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.